This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It was big news when Saturday Night Live announced the addition of Shasir Zimeta to the cast. She's the first African-American woman in 7 years and one of the very few in the show's history. Turns out that lack of diversity is reflected in the larger media world. Why do minorities still tend to get short shrift in the entertainment industry? Naima Clark has spent much of her career exploring that question. She's an associate professor of communications at Elon University and the co-author of a textbook on the subject called Diversity in U.S. Media, and she joins us now. Naima, welcome. Good to have you here.
Oh, thanks. I'm so glad to be here.
So tell us about this case, Saturday Night Live, and kind of why this is also such a big news story.
Yeah, a few months ago, one of the cast members on the show, Kenan Thompson, lamented that he was tired of playing women on the show. But there were no, according to Kenan, there were no funny African-American women who were ready to be on SNL. And so it created a little bit of a firestorm because there were many people of the African-American community who said that's not true. There are tons of funny African-American women who are ready. But Kenan disagreed, and so the show began to look for people of women of color to be on the show. And the hiring of Shasir, which in a way I feel for her, I think that she is under a huge amount of pressure. But the hiring of Shasir hopefully will expand the types of characters that will be on the show.
Well, the good news for Saturday Night Live, of course, is that they're in a position to actually deal with it frontally, head on, and say, yeah, we've got this problem, and we can actually deal with it in the production of the show. For instance, the show tried to address it when Kerry Washington was on, African-American star of the show, Scandal, was on the show and started with her doing an impression of Michelle Obama. So let's listen.
Michelle, it's such a treat. I feel like it's been years since I've seen you.
It may feel that way, but I'm always here for you, and I always will be here for you.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but Oprah Winfrey has arrived for the dinner, and she would love to pop in and say hello.
Well, that's wonderful.
What a nice surprise.
Isn't it? So don't you think you should go and get changed?
Why?
So that Oprah can come in?
Oh, because of the hole.
Yes, exactly.
And Kenan won't?
Nope.
Well, in that case, I will leave, and in a few minutes, Oprah will be here.
Thank you, Mrs. Obama.
The producers at Saturday Night Live would like to apologize to Kerry Washington for the number of black women she will be asked to play today. We made these requests both because Miss Washington is an actress of considerable range and talent, and also because SNL does not currently have a black woman in the cast. As for the latter reason, we agree this is not an ideal situation and look forward to rectifying it in the near future. Unless, of course, we fall in love with another white guy first.
So they're in a great position. They can make fun of their own foibles here. Mm-hmm. But what's the larger question here? What's the larger issue?
Well, there are actually several issues. The first, and I think that the one that is more profound to me or most profound to me, is by saying we don't have an African-American woman on this cast, yet we continually hire 27-year-old white males. Mm. Who are they saying is important? Who is worthy even of satire? And so it's not that they're discriminating against African-American women. It's that we have become invisible. We're just not even there. And if we are there, we are portrayed by men. And so, again, that becomes not just a race issue, but a gender issue for the woman. Again, if you were Whoopi Goldberg or Star Jones or Michelle Obama and you are being portrayed by a male, is that saying that you as a woman are not as feminine as a white woman? Because there are other white women portrayed on the show by white women. Also, for the male who portrays the woman, that is certainly historically problematic, and it is very, it has been considered to be inappropriate, discriminatory to have African-American males playing women. And that is sort of a common trope in media, to have males, African-American males, in drag playing women.
I mean, is it a kind of minstrelsy?
Sure, of course. And it is very emasculating. And so, again, that idea of the black male as being dominant is hampered. And not that I'm saying that African-American males are always dominant, but I'm saying that it sort of diminishes who the male is by saying, well, now you play this woman.
And in terms of what you're seeing, because the kind of caricature that you're going to do as a male playing a female is far less subtle than mm-hmm. anything you're going to do if you want to do an impersonation of a president. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a certain amount of characterization and caricature, but it won't be as broad mm-hmm. and as slapstick as mm-hmm. that's what you're going to get when a male plays a female.
Yeah, right. You know, I had a situation with teach a introduction to communications course at Elon, and I had the students write a film treatment, and then they had to cast the parts. And I was surprised the number of groups in the class who had, first, they did not have very many, they didn't know very many actors and actresses of color. And so it was the same few mentioned over and over again in the treatments. But then also one of the groups, they had a female role played by a man in drag for no other reason other than they couldn't think of a female actress who was over the age of 50. And I stopped them and said, why did you do this? And said, well, we, you know, it was just a class project. And so we just came up with this idea. And they didn't realize the historical significance of doing that and the harm in doing that of the erasure of the African-American actress.
And wait, so what does it mean when an actor says, well, there just aren't enough African-American women in comedy who are ready? Mm. There have been plenty of not so funny men on that show.
Sure.
I can name them. but my point is that it seems to me to be a question of attention. If you say they're not there, it means you're not looking in the right mm-hmm. places, or you don't see them yeah. when they're right before you. I mean, is that what's happening?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Shasir apparently auditioned for the show last year. And then this past probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, Lorne Michaels did a showcase at a comedy club for African-American actresses, and there were at least a dozen who came out. And so these people do exist. These right. women do exist. I just, you know, I don't know if they weren't looking for them, or maybe they didn't think Shasir was right at the time, and she got some more training through the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is a comedy troupe in New York, started by Amy Poehler, I believe. And then also, she's been on a show on Comedy Central with Amy Schumer, and that show has been successful and has built a great career for Amy Schumer and has sort of introduced Shasir to a larger audience as well.
To what extent is it a problem of looking for a type?
Mm-hmm.
You're not looking for simply a comedic actor, mm-hmm. you want to find a black female actor who can play the kind of roles I have in mm-hmm. mind that may be stereotypic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. There are just going to be a handful of celebrity roles that are going to be played on SNL by the African-American characters. If you think back to who Maya Rudolph played, she played Beyonce. She did Michelle Obama. That might have been it.
Right.
But then she also played, you know, Donatella Versace. So she did sort right. of a range of characters. But with Shasir, she on the Amy Schumer show and then on other online comedy outlets as well, she's played Michelle Obama. She's played Beyonce. So she does have that. She's done Rihanna, too, and she does a pretty good Rihanna. And so she does have a skill set that will be added to the show. But then also, you do have to be good at other types of comedy.
Well, there are plenty of sketches that don't involve celebrities,
exactly.
and they can be anybody. And so here's maybe where we get to Kerry Washington again, mm-hmm. who you heard in that sketch, because when they needed to find an African-American female, there was one on TV, right. although playing a dramatic role mm-hmm. in Scandal. So tell us about her mm-hmm. and where she fits in this discussion.
Okay, I will say this, too. I think that when Keenan made that comment, Kerry Washington was going to be on that next week, and people thought, oh, they found Kerry Washington to be on the next week. That's not how SNL works. And so she was going to be on before, and she's a huge star. And so it wasn't like they just called her up and said, hey, do you have anything to do this weekend?
Right.
because I'm sure she's busy handling other situations in LA. But Kerry Washington this past year and a half has been groundbreaking and has, I believe, change the way that African-American women are seen in Hollywood in general. They are seen as being leads in shows. They're seen as being beautiful. They're seen as being sex symbols. They're seen as being extremely intelligent, extremely articulate, and can be used in a variety of situations. Kerry Washington is very funny, just on talk shows if you see her. She's very funny. And so when she was on SNL, at least to me, it was no surprise that she was good at that, because she is seems to be a funny, smart person.
And can play a role that where race isn't a relevant factor.
Right.
Anybody could play this role.
Right.
In Scandal, she plays a sort of a political fixer.
Mm-hmm.
That can
right.
be a male, it can be female, it can be any race.
Right. So, oh, I don't know.
No?
I don't know. I think that
no?
Olivia Pope has to be an African-American
yeah.
woman. Maybe because I'm an African-American woman, I can't imagine her being anyone else.
All
I
right.
can't imagine it.
Well, we'll talk more about this as our conversation continues. On the state of things, we're taking a look at the representations of women, particularly, and minorities in media. Naima Clark is with us right now. She's an associate professor of communications at Elon University and the co-author of a textbook on the subject. It's called Diversity in U.S. Media, and we'll take a look at that diversity in greater detail when our program continues on the State of Things. From North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, today talking about representations of minorities in media. With us, Naima Clark, associate professor of communications at Elon University. She's co-authored a textbook called Diversity in U.S. Media. And joining us now is Devin Orgeron. He's an associate professor of English at North Carolina State University in the Film Studies program. Devin, welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here again.
Tell us, you know, we've been talking about television and, you know, we're going to talk about the movies, too. In the past 30 years or so, how do you think TV has handled diversity? Has it sort of been normalized, or are we always talking about people in their roles?
I feel like it's kind of a vexed question in some ways. I feel like every now and then there seem to be these great strides, and you see it but I can't help it. And I was listening to you all discussing the SNL situation, and I don't see this as a victory. I see it as really kind of a sad state of affairs, because it took a national controversy and this kind of strained conversation for the network executives to acknowledge the fact that this thing might actually be a problem. And so I think that there's still a lot of ground to cover, particularly I think with regard to what I guess we might call mainstream media, by which I mean I think sort of network and cable television and Hollywood film. I think where the real action is and where really important things are happening are well outside of the mainstream. And I think in particular, I've been impressed in recent years by programs, and you keep reading and hearing about these programs whereby certain individuals or collectives will bring cameras and recording equipment into sort of underserved schools and give people an opportunity to sort of voice themselves, so that it does. It's starting at the very beginning, so that that idea becomes normalizing. It becomes a sort of a wide scale rethink of that phenomenon that you were exploring earlier about what normal is.
Yeah, and it would seem to me that for those students who are then able to say, here's a reflection of me that I don't see in mainstream mm-hmm. media, it would be a way to say, oh, there's another me. There's somebody I can be that's not on that screen.
But of course I think that Devin is correct. There does need to be a way to tell your own story, whether that's done through independent media. That's great. But then there also does have to be a commercial acceptance of who you are. You know, African-American teenagers, Hispanic teenagers all have money to spend. And so if the industry looked at it like that, they'd be more likely to tell those stories. I think also Devin made me think of this, that also we have to not just look at who is in front of the camera. We have mm-hmm. to look at who's behind it, who is making decisions. The reason that Scandal is successful and the reason that Scandal, Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, the reason that they have such diverse casts is because there are diverse people working on the show. The showrunner for the show, Shonda Rhimes, makes it a point to have an organic looking cast. It looks like people we know in everyday life.
Mm-hmm. So is that a part of it, do you think, Devin? It's not so much that media are pandering to what they consider the tropes and stereotypes that are already in the minds of viewers. They just don't know any better. They're not diverse enough themselves.
I think it's partly that, and I agree with Naima that the sort of key ingredient here is at the level of production, and I think that's where these programs that I was discussing earlier are really key, because it gives these kids an opportunity to also say, I control who I'm putting in front of the camera. And I think this is a really key ingredient. I think there was this movement. These things wax and wane, these sorts of, media trends or academic trends, and I'm a victim of both to some degree. But I think that in the mid to late 90s, there was this energy that was quite palpable in terms of, diverse groups of collectives making films. Women Make Movies comes to mind, or there was kind of a renaissance in African-American filmmaking, and that trend, sadly, I think has waned a little bit, and I think it just takes a certain change in conversation and a change in tone to get people to pay attention. This is what you were speaking
about. Sort of reminds you of the ascendancy of Spike Lee when he was sort of all the rage. You think of the movie Bamboozled, right? And that actually, again, frontally takes on the question of race and type in the media.
Absolutely.
We're auditioning for a house band for the show. The name of the group is the Alabama Porch Monkeys. Do we have a problem? Any concerns with that?
No, sir.
Please let us hear some of your funk.
There we go. But again, but it waxes and wanes. In other words, there was a way in which Spike Lee was very popular. This film could take on the whole question in the foreground. What do you think accounts for the rise and fall of attention to this question?
I don't know what it is. I think that Spike Lee has done everything in his power to make us not stop paying attention. And that film was a really critical ingredient, at least in turn, even though it was kind of panned by critics. I think what was really important about it, aside from its thematics, was the fact that it was shot on video. So I think he was literally, through the media that he was using, he was attempting to make a kind of broader comment about taking the equipment in your own hands and sort of changing that conversation.
I will also say, though, that yes, Spike Lee has done what he can. But one thing that he has struggled with in the last few years is making films that people want to see. And so there, you can make as many films starring African Americans as you want, but if no one wants to see them, we end up with a whole lot of Tyler Perry films. Which, love Tyler Perry. The haves and have-nots were on last night. That becomes another issue. Then something else that I think is really important in African-American cinema is to look at what happened this year in film. There are many films this year, good films, featuring African-Americans that are maybe up for Academy Awards, 12 Years a Slave, Fruitvale Station, The Butler. There are plenty of these films. And so people did go see them, but those films were all very difficult to get made. Mm-hmm. Even Spike Lee started a Kickstarter it's funding a film that he's going to be working on soon. But it's difficult to find funding because some of the films that have been made with African Americans have not done necessarily well. Tyler Perry, though, he doesn't struggle necessarily making films, but his films just aren't great. But they are serving an audience.
Well, so. I'm talking about playing to type. I mean, again, this is the question. When can we see people of color and women playing roles where race and gender just aren't the relevant factor? It wouldn't matter who played what the race or gender of that character. Mm-hmm. And so we could find it. In those cases, that's where we find, generally speaking, white male actors. That's normal.
That's true.
It's harder to break through that. So we can do good films where race is the relevant theme, and then we'll find great actors sort of rising.
But I do think, though, that it is easier for a director, producer to cast Denzel Washington instead of Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. I think that that can be done because Denzel Washington has shown that he can bring box office. It is more difficult for a producer to say, you know what, we're not going to hire Charlize Theron. We're going to get Gabrielle Union instead. That is a different story that is harder to do. And I think because often women in the films are playing the love interest, and that creates a different type of story than they want to tell. But it's a real story. It happens in the world all the time. And so why not tell that story?
That's an interesting point. I think, too, that these questions of diversity cut well beyond race and gender. I'm thinking of I like the fact that you brought up this idea of, you know, any actor playing any character. When are we going to get to that point? I've been especially impressed with the character R.J. Mitty plays on Breaking Bad, a character who has cerebral palsy. R.J. Mitty has a milder case of cerebral palsy himself, and his character it's not a focal point of his character. It comes up now and again, but he is kind of a character that seems to be recognized for things beyond that sort of identifying mark. And I think it's an interesting test case in some ways. Mm-hmm.
Do you think popular media could ever get past that, in the sense that, and let me just sort of posit this theory, that the only reason anybody pays attention to a mediated experience on film or on television, that this is a form of narcissism, that we want to see ourselves and we want to see ourselves represented well. And that means I want to see a successful type up there. I want to see something that's worked in this narcissistic exercise that is watching film. You have to buy a lot to begin to answer that question. But if any of that's true, then can we ever get to that point where people who have already been typed can break that type?
It can be done. It will have to be done by a very creative and courageous executive producer who's willing to say, you know what, I'm not going to keep hiring these same types. I'm going to try something different. And once it is done well, and it is commercial, and it makes a lot of money, then it will be done again.
And over and over.
Because that's, right, that's how the industry works. If something is done well and it makes money, it will be done again. I'm actually thinking again about Scandal. I could talk about Scandal for 17 hours, but unfortunately. But if you look at Scandal, there will be other programs starring African-American women.
Sure.
And that will become not necessarily the norm, but it will become more normalized. I'm thinking again about BET's Being Mary Jane. That show was fantastic. It was on last night. There will be more stories like that told because those are done well and they're making money.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about Scandal, and just at the break, I made the suggestion that I thought that the main character in that could actually that Olivia Pope could be played by anyone. You really thought that has to be an African-American woman.
Well, first of all, because it's based on a real person. Obviously, the woman who it's based on, Judy Smith, did not have an affair with the actual president, George Bush. But
as far as we know,
she says she didn't. And George Bush says that he didn't either. But, you know, who knows? Fitz would lie too. But and he did. I think, though, that the reason that the Olivia Pope character resonates so well is because she is different. She is unexpected. And frankly, the reason the show stayed on the first year was because African-American women were watching it. A lot of people were not watching the show the first year. And so African-American women, especially in the social media community, which is a whole other discussion, kept that show on the air. I think, too, one of the parts of the show that is successful is the romantic relationship between the president and the dynamics. The tension would not be the same if it were a white woman.
And yet it's rarely addressed directly, the same thing. I mean, I'm now going to play the exception. We'll play a clip from Scandal. Kerry Washington, of course, plays the role of Olivia Pope. But now she's getting a speech from her father criticizing her affair. And this is sort of, I think, one of the rare examples where race is really confronted directly. Let's listen.
He told you that you would be first lady, and you believed him. Did I not raise you for better? How many times have I told you you have to be what? You have to be what?
Twice.
What?
Twice as good.
Twice as good as them to get half of what they have.
We go a clip from Scandal. So, but that doesn't happen often. I mean, or would you say that race is always you think it's a pretty obvious subtext?
I think it's a pretty obvious subtext in the show. I think that, at least for me, just on the surface, I wonder if on the show, if she were a blonde woman, would it have been as easy to hide the affair? I think that's certainly something that is never brought up in the show. Also, one of the first, actually, I think it was the 8th episode of season 2. Yes, I watched the show a lot. There was.
Wow.
The episode, the title is Happy Birthday, Mr. President. Anyway, when the president is shot, sorry if you haven't seen it, but when the president
Spoilers.
Is shot and it's done in flashback, that she does say to him, I feel very Sally Hemings about all this.
Then
they do have this great scene in the Rose Garden where they're arguing, and the president says, there's no Sally or Thomas here. We are two people who are in love, and you can't use race as a reason to say you're not in love with me. And then also, one other thing that I will comment on, I think that African-American women pick up on this, is that when she was dating an African-American man on the show, to demonstrate how much he loved her, he said, I've seen you straighten your hair. For an African-American woman, that's powerful. And so, again, race wasn't mentioned, but if you're watching the show with that lens, it's very clear.
It's coded.
It's coded, and it means something. There's also scenes in the shower and things like that, that for African-American women, that means something.
Well, that's something, too. So then something as a producer and a writer you'd have to pay attention to. So who's watching this and which audiences are going to take what from these scenes? Mm-hmm. And as a writer, if you're an African-American writer, particularly a woman, you understand what the meaning of wet hair is, right, in a way that a white man just isn't going to do,
sure.
Right? So some of the larger questions around it. In fact, I want you to tell a story because I think part of this, you know, we can illustrate what this means for all of us. You have written an essay on a Halloween. So tell us about that and kind of how this plays into your research.
As a little girl, we grew up middle class in New Jersey, and we lived in a mixed neighborhood, mixed race neighborhood, and for Halloween one year, I think I was 5, I wanted to be Marie Osmond. And Marie Osmond was, at the time, the Donny Marie show was huge. This was in the 70s. My students have no idea what I'm talking about. The 70s.
Which decade?
Yeah. She's like 1,000.
Yeah.
So my mom went out and she got us the standard, you know, Halloween mask. I have a twin sister. Got us a standard Halloween mask. And when she put it on us, you could see in her face that she thought, I can't possibly send my 2 African-American girls out in the streets as white women. And so she put brown makeup on the face, and we were mortified. We cried, and because Marie Osmond doesn't look like that.
You were both Marie.
Well, you know, actually, I was Marie, and my sister actually.
Please don't say Donnie.
Wonder Woman. She was Wonder Woman.
Okay,
she was Wonder Woman.
Even better.
Yeah, even better, because Wonder Woman was huge in the 70s, too, if you remember. And so she put brown makeup on both of the masks. I tell the story from my perspective. And so we were mortified, and my father actually was kind of upset that my mother had spent the money on the mask that had destroyed them with the brown Maybelline makeup. And so growing up, though, all I wanted to do was be beautiful. I wanted people to think I was beautiful. I remember asking for my birthday one year to have hair like Cher, because Cher had all that long black hair and I didn't have that. And my mother gave me a bang and said, well, now you look like Cher. And I knew I didn't. But at least.
Actually, you looked a bit like Sonny with just the bangs. But
That's true. Poor Sonny. And that idea of wanting to be beautiful.
And of course, there's nothing essentially beautiful about Cher's long black hair, is there? So it means that this is the image. This is what we've been told is beautiful. So what I will aspire to, whatever race and gender and whatever. Size and body type I am, which is, I guess, what we're really talking about, isn't it, Devin? It's the fact that we present these things, and it has an impact on a lot of people who watch it. They all have to hew to the line.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's part of what you were implying when you were discussing the narcissism of media and our relationship to it. Is we want to see ourselves, but we want to see ourselves in a kind of idealized state, and it's not. It's sadly us who gets to determine what the ideal is. It's a chicken or egg question. I think in some ways that media has always been telling us what the ideal is and then feeding it back to us.
Is media becoming more democratized because of the internet and platform?
I like the idea that it is. And I feel like it is. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I think shows like Glee have gone quite some distance in sort of that with that aim in mind. But I think there's always a lot more that can be done. And I'm struck too, because I'm sitting here thinking of just the complexity of these issues, because one of the things Naima had mentioned is the fact that one of the reasons people were watching Scandal in particular was because that character was African-American and because that was different. And I think that this question of what is different and what is normal is just it's so complex.
Then we'll bring you both back on later to talk about it, because I'm out of time now. But I want to thank you both for being on the program. Naima Clark is an associate professor of communications at Elon. She's co-written a textbook called Diversity in U.S. Media. Devin Orgeron is an associate professor of English at North Carolina State in the Film Studies program. Thanks both for having you,
being on the
air. Coming up, we're going to get a preview of a film, The Editor and the Dragon. Stay tuned.